Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of Bloody Good Horror. My name's Eric, and I'll be your host for this evening, where we will be reviewing A24's Alex Garland's Kirsten Dunst's Civil War.
So many possessives.
What a contradiction, John, a Civil War, and we're going to talk about it tonight. Joining me first up from the Bay Area of San Francisco, please welcome Matilda to the show.
Hey, everyone.
Next up from the hinterlands? I was going to say the hinterlands. From the part in this movie where people are in refugee camps, please welcome Casey to the show.
Hello.
And last up tonight from Manhattan, New York City. We are there briefly in this movie. Please welcome John Schnars to the show.
Hello.
Someone asked today, John, I'll just skip to this question quick. Which would John be on the side of the bad guys? To which I replied, John would be in a purge bunker if this was happening.
I mean, I hope.
John would be hanging out with Ethan Hawke and
Lord
his family.
Knows.
Yeah.
John would be with his Nordic family in like Iceland or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ew, close the purge shutters, please. I don't want to see these people.
Put me on a boat. Just let's go.
Yeah, we didn't see much of the sea. We don't really know what's going on in the sea here, John. But you know, East Coast, there's a lot of action going on there, a lot of real estate.
It's not great.
Fought
Doesn't
over,
look so. Good.
No. All right. Let's do it. Let's take a quick break and review Civil War.
This is it, gentlemen. Your big break in TV. About the prime time.
Main feature.
You know what I rewatched recently, John? Completely accidentally? Like, I didn't do it because of this movie, and then it clicked, but Annihilation.
I thought you were going to say Glory. Or
no, I love
The
Glory,
Killer though. Angels.
I have so much nostalgia for Glory. That movie is so good.
It's a sweet movie.
It's amazing. No, Annihilation.
Yeah,
another
also
Alex
sweet.
Garland film.
Mm-hmm.
Have we done all of his movies on the show, or at least all the genre ones?
I mean, they're all... I think we have done them all.
Annihilation, Ex Machina, Civil War.
I was here for Men.
Or Men, yes.
Yeah. Men.
Or Men, yes. Yeah.
Did we do that?
Yeah.
That's the one where the men coming out of the mouth, and then there's like another one? Or is that something?
The guy, he turns like inside out at one point.
Yeah, I didn't like that. That was him?
Yeah.
Wild. Okay.
Yeah, we have done all his movies. Ex Machina, Annihilation, Men, and Civil War.
Well, the nerve of him to have made only four movies into this film.
He's written, you know, Alex Garland got his start as a writer. Like, that's like what he's known for. He wrote Dread, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Pretty
he wrote Sunshine. He wrote Never Let Me Go. He wrote 28 Days Later, which was like, you know.
I think I asked this last time.
Yeah.
Did anyone else watch Devs? Did anyone else watch his TV series?
Yeah, we did talk about it. I think I still haven't watched it.
Yeah.
I think it's worth it.
It's really weird. Yeah, it's really weird. And it's also a Nick Offerman involved project.
Yeah. Oh man, I wanted so much more.
You have my attention.
I wanted so much more Offerman, but he is really great in his little moment he gets here. All right, John. Mm-hmm. Words. You're telling me Alex Garland wrote words before he directed movies.
That's what
I heard. All right, then please bring us the word of the day.
Eric, today's word is sectionalism. Sectionalism. S-E-C-T-I-O-N-A-L-I-S-M. Sectionalism. I'm going to give you the definition and then we can come back and talk about why I picked this word. Restriction of interest to a narrow sphere. Undue concern with local interests or petty distinctions at the expense of general well-being. Sectionalism. It's not giving me an etymology, so we'll just skip ahead. I've been listening. I was actually sort of probably enthralling Rachel with this while we were in Cincinnati, but I've been listening to several books about the 19th century America and the Civil War and sectionalism. If you need a one word, why did the Civil War happen? You could say sectionalism.
Love it.
So there you go.
John.
Yes.
Tell me about Civil War.
Yeah, Civil War. We mentioned Alex Garland. He both wrote and directed it. Stars Kirsten Dunst as Lee. She is sort of, I don't know, world renowned, or at least well known among young journalists. She's a photojournalist, a war correspondent, you know, sort of someone who has like made a career of going into conflict zones and documenting them, you know, on camera. She is paired with Joel, who is another journalist who's sort of, I mean, he's like a on-screen journalist. I mean, they don't really get into exactly what he does. Maybe he's a writer, but he and Lee are setting out to go interview Nick Offerman. I should have probably said
President.
There's a civil war happening. It's in the title. So, you know, if you've made it this far. Yeah. So
there is brief mention of him having taken on a third term, which of course would be new precedent.
It would be against the Constitution. Yes.
That's bad. Okay.
So he
would it be John? Because I thought a lot of things were like literally against the rules until Trump came along and just said, nah, right. Turns out all we right. just agreed Eric, to do not do
Eric,
shit.
We can't go down that
I'm
rabbit
hole. I'm genuinely
all.
Curious. Is we're that not, in the Constitution?
It is.
I don't know.
You can be president for 10 years. So it's not technically two terms. You can be president for two terms plus two additional years.
So you're saying it's not exactly in the Constitution.
Well, you can't win a third term. You wouldn't be able to run for president a third time. But the precedent would be if you were a vice president who became president for 2 years, for example, you could then run for two successive
terms. You
could
still do two terms. Got it. See, correct. This is well. I'm not trying to start shit, John. I'm just trying to learn something.
Constitutional scholar is, you know, something I do in my free time.
I love it. You've learned that in the rare book room at Duke.
No, that's, I had a really insane American history high school teacher that, you know, I learned many things that are kicking around in there. Okay. So Nick Offerman, as Eric said, is now in his third term as president. The country has fractured. All of this is explained to us barely and in like very fleeting glimpses. And frankly, and something we should talk about, it's not really important to the sort of, you know, the narrative thrust of the film. But basically, Lee and Joel are setting out to go to Washington, D.C. from New York. They are talked into taking two other journalists with them. One is Jessie. She is a like young 20s aspiring photojournalist who sort of like idolizes Kirsten Dunst's character. And then the other is Sammy, played by Stephen McKinley Henderson, who I can't remember. We talked about him like not that long ago and I can't remember what movie he was in, but he's like one of these sort of like all time character actor types. He's super old as they discuss in the film and they're like sort of reticent to
as
bring
they discuss
him
at length about how old he
yeah.
is.
Yeah. And he's also like, you know, I don't want to be impolite, but he's not in great shape, either. So the four of them set out, they're in this sort of like press van and they're, you know, the rest of the movie is effectively what I would call a road film. It's a war film. It's a road film. It's sort of like a movie about journalism, but they are on this trek from New York City to Washington, D.C. But the only way they can get there is to go via Charlottesville, which is described to us as the front line. It's where the two countries that are sort of most actively engaged in combat here are California
and states.
States. Well, they've formed a new country. They've seceded and they are now a sort of like new country, Texas and California. And they are basically about to destroy Washington, D.C. Like D.C. is falling and the journalists are basically like trying to rush there to ideally interview the president, but also just like document what happens. It's mm-hmm. called the Western Front. That's like what the alliance between Texas and California is called.
No. Is it Western Front? I thought it was something else.
The WF. That's or the Western Forces, maybe they're calling it.
It was Western Forces.
I think
Forces.
It's Western okay. Front.
Yeah. I thought it was Western Front too, but maybe it's Front. Western Forces. Yeah. So, I mean, that's it. That's the setup. Like, otherwise, it's, you know, we can get into it, but it's in some ways it's like a trim film in that you really have these four characters and we are like living with these four characters.
It's strangely intimate given the setting.
Correct.
Yeah.
I will get into it. I saw this in IMAX and yeah, like it's like a bizarre thing to see in IMAX because there's a lot of it that is about the like scenery and the setting of this conflict happening in the US, but
even the small battle scenes are disturbing and the sound is so intense at times.
Yeah. So I was reading this before I went in and I've seen a lot of horror movies, obviously, but I've seen a bunch of war movies, not like all the war movies necessarily, but apparently there are like many scenes in this film that are recreations from other war films. There's definitely an Apocalypse Now shot that I like, you know, it's when the helicopter is like coming into the base. But even that, like the gunfight that they are witnessing, I feel like that was like Black Hawk Down potentially. There's a sequence like that, but in any event, that was like a thing he set out to do, was sort of recreate some of these war scenes, but place them in the United States.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. All right, Matilda, go for it. What'd you think?
So I love Alex Gardner, so I was excited to see this, but I was also slightly dreading seeing this.
Garland.
I was both excited.
Garland.
Oh, Garland. So sorry.
You might love Alex Gardner too. We just, you know.
Garland, sorry. So I was slightly dreading the experience of this, and that turned, because I thought it could be quite upsetting to watch, and that turned out to be true. This movie does a really interesting thing, kind of like John, you talked about, that it's much more concerned with the violence itself and the consequences of violence in the US than it is anything about the ideology that got us there, which is a really interesting moment to make this movie that way. The violence itself is like up close, unsparing, matter of fact. Eric, you talked about the noise, and I think I haven't felt this punished by noise of gunfire and helicopters and bombs. Since like Oppenheimer.
It's so intense. Yeah. You really feel like you're in it with them.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is the time that I was really excited to talk about this one, but I slightly wish that Ariel or Rachel was here because both of them are journalists. And so I was kind of curious about, I'd be very curious about their take about like the journalism pieces of this. But it almost causes you sitting in the theater, almost causes you to reckon with your own relationship with violence and desensitization. I went with my mom, as you do. So it is not since Requiem for a Dream were we so much like, I need to process this a little bit when we went and saw that together. And she reported to me that she was desensitized by the final act. I think I was not. I kind of like checked in with my body and I was like, oh, I'm sitting, like my glutes are totally clenched. I'm up, my heart's going. I'm like, there are almost tears behind my eyes. Like it's really intense.
Both of those reactions though, right? Are really valid to the experience and both interesting in context of the film.
Right. Right. And she has more numbing kind of responses than I do. And we got to DC and I was like with Kirsten Dunst a little bit, who I have to say is doing a phenomenal job in this movie.
Incredible. Yeah.
Real good.
Yeah. Not since Drop Dead Gorgeous have I been like so in love with Kirsten Dunst. And when I asked my mom what she thought, she said a really interesting thing. I had told her, she and I had seen Ex Machina together, and I said, do you want to go see this with me? And he made something
down
in between.
For some wacky stuff, huh?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. And so in the meantime, I said, you know, he's made Men since then. So she watched that yesterday. And I had said, there's a scene you might not, with a mail delivery, you may not want to watch that scene. So just look out for it. And she said to me when she got in the car today, he is such an amazing director that I know you told me to look away from the screen, but no matter what's on the screen, it's so beautiful. I do not want to look away from it.
Mm. Oh, so
and I was like, well, that's pretty close to the experience here. Cause you don't want to, you kind of can't look away from it. So that's what it felt like to me.
Wow. Casey.
I was expecting all along that, you know, that this movie would have kind of a hard drawn line in the middle of the good versus the bad and whatnot. And it's not what this movie is at all. It is definitely more about war journalism. There was, I kind of had the same realization as some of the characters in the middle of this movie. I'm like, they don't know who's who. And shortly after that, even the character mentioned, you know, we don't know. Or it was the sniper scene. And he was asking, that's what really drove it home to me, is that sniper scene. And he's asking the sniper, who's giving you your orders? And he's like, there's no orders. They're shooting at me, so I'm shooting back.
That is so pointed and thematic. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of ambiguity to this movie versus what I was expecting, you know, had built up in my head going in. And I really think that ambiguity to it really adds a lot. We're in the thick of this with these characters, and you don't know in this situation, you don't know for sure who you're going to run into, and you don't necessarily who's good and bad. And you've got the elements of people that are just going to do whatever the hell they want too. Kind of like Jesse Plemons, who I know is a soldier. He was with the coalition that was like the West Northwest Coast and Colorado.
I would guess by the way he's talking that he's a U.S. guy because he side-eyes the one eye when he's talking about being from Florida. But I would also argue that Plemons is rogue. He's literally just committing war crimes for fun.
Well, that's what I mean. You've got those people going across there too. And if you think about the reality of this, if this situation happened and you got to make that journey, really feels like it hits it on the nose. And then you add in the shock and the trauma of watching Americans do this to other Americans and letting that sink in with some of this violence. It's just chilling.
Chilling is a good word.
That's like ultimately the sort of the point, right? Fact that we don't know what side Jesse Plemons is on. I mean, you know, we could speculate and like he's wearing a specific uniform, I guess, but he's just a dude committing war crimes like in the middle of West Virginia.
Yeah.
Because he knows nobody's going to stop him.
With some absolutely psychotic sunglasses on to be committing war crimes in. And I loved those touches though, right? Those kind of Gen Z soldier, like with their hair dyed and like, it's kind of fascinating. It's interesting.
Jesse Plum is a little older than Gen Z.
These younger kids that were fighting with the hair. I just thought that was interesting.
And the nail polish.
Yeah. I mean, I love this. Like, it is a physically strenuous exercise to like sit through and experience. I was in the IMAX theater. It's like an enormous theater. It's like it's the big IMAX screen here. And it was probably like a third full on Monday morning at 11 in the morning, like, which was like more than I was expecting. But there was a dude probably two seats down from me. He legit like was sitting without his back touching the seat. Like he was making me nervous because he was like sitting forward. And the one point there was some scene that had like some really aggressive gunfire in it. And it kind of like, it was like a hard cut and he jumped, I looked over and was distracted from the movie because he was reacting so extremely. It's a really interesting movie. I mean, it was not what I was expecting. Like, I was very curious how they were going to handle, because everybody, when the trailer came out, all the jokes were like, Texas and California. Yeah, right. You know, and like, that's true. And I was sort of curious how he was going to like work around it. But it was also like, he just like didn't, he was like, doesn't give a fuck. Like, it's not about that at any level
of what he's doing.
Yeah.
And so once I sort of realized like, oh, this isn't about, it's not about the politics or the sectionalism in specifics in any way. It is just about the sort of the violence and sort of what war in America would look like today, modern warfare. It's a really gripping experience. I thought all of the acting was just phenomenal. You know, I mean, the movie hangs off these four characters.
I would be shocked if there were not multiple Oscar nominations from this thing.
I mean, we'll see. It's possible. It'll come down to, I think, like, does A24 even sort of like put the effort in, you know, like, cause it's a weird movie to get that kind of attention. It's early in the season, you know, like you're right. Like deserving, I'm not saying not deserving, but it's, you know, there's like a whole lot that would have to go into that. But the, so I don't know. There's like a ton we can talk about. I thought the younger actress was incredible. I feel like we'd seen her in something recently, and now I can't remember what it is. Kaylee Spaney. Oh, she was Priscilla. We were just talking about this with Rachel, I think. And she was in Bad Times at El Royale. Like, she's kind of been around, but you know, I haven't seen Priscilla yet. But this is just like, I mean, she gets in my mind sort of the meatiest role. I mean, between her and Lee,
yeah,
they're the sort of like heart of this film.
Yeah,
her character irritated me. She was a great actress, but her character irritated me.
Yeah, but that's kind of the point is that she's naive, right? And like, yeah. This thing is brilliant. It's timely. It is prescient. Well, hopefully.
I mean, hopefully not.
But it's just so fucking brilliant. Like the second the trailer came out, everyone did the predictable thing and went like, Texas and California, like they're not gonna whatever. Mm-hmm. And I love it because everyone got sucked into his trap of their expectations of what this film can be, because it plays perfectly into his hands of how he's completely subverting the idea that the ideology even fucking matters. Like, his whole point is that the more myopic you get with ideology, the closer you get to like the thin veneer of society crumbling, and the closer you get to this world where violence is just perpetrated for the sake of violence and it's all survival. It's really telling that just scene after scene, we run into people that either the film doesn't tell us whose side, quote unquote, I say quote unquote side, there are no sides presented in the film. The barest thing you get is that this Nick Offerman third term thing. And it is like, you hear it in the distance of a news thing. It's not focused on. Yeah. We get this little moment in the beginning, and let's be real. Like, we're all filling in the blanks of Offerman, in my opinion, is like a Trump-esque character, right?
They did mention he was authoritarian.
Yeah.
Right. You get that word, and you get like the vibe of his speech, right? Like
And you see him, the film actually opens on him practicing to give a speech.
Like, when we're out in the field, the people that are out there fighting for these Western forces, they're just like people. They're not like jackbooted, like they're not like space Nazis like in Star Wars, right? Like, it's just Americans versus Americans. They've all got green uniforms on. Mm-hmm. Our people are largely following the Western forces, so in a way, they're more humanized. But like, even the people fighting on the other side, they're just your American military people, right? Or police or whatever. Secret Service, once you kind of get into Washington. It is so pointed that he doesn't even get into the ideology, because again, it's not the point, right? And like, we're following journalists. The whole arc of the film is Kirsten Dunst trying to teach this young kid that like we don't take a side. Mm-hmm. We just capture and we put it up for other people to decide. And then when you zoom out a layer, the film is doing the same thing. The film, in my opinion, does not really take a side and doesn't really ask. Now we fill in the blanks ourselves, because we hear, of course, you hear authoritarian, like that doesn't sound great, but also like, in a reality where Texas and California, like there's reasons you could think of. They're two of the most populous states. Like, there's water rights and food concerns, right? Especially in a near future. There's a million reasons you could have cooked up to explain why these two states. I also love that, like, Florida is, like, the wild card. They just, like, mention offhandedly, like, oh, the People's Free Republic of Florida.
Well, they show a map.
Yeah.
They show a map, and there's, like, four or five different...
Yeah, like, it goes across to, like, Alabama.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's really the Western forces that are going after Washington, but it seems like the rest of the country has effectively like fallen apart.
I think it's a really brilliant piece of art. I think it subverts on every level the expectations of what you might expect from a film called Civil War in our current state. And honestly, like, I don't know what he's out there saying about this film, but it reads to me like a warning.
Sure.
This is what dehumanization leads to.
It very much is trying to show you what that level of violence looks like on the ground in the United States.
Yeah. And those images, like stay with you. Like it's this refugee camp at this like high school football stadium. Like, cause that's a brilliant scene because you spend the first hour, you almost see no people. It's like, it looks like Zombieland when they're dry or like Walking Dead as they're kind of trying to navigate the highway. And you're in the back of your head going like, where are all the people? But then you're like, well, of course, if this is the corridor where the war is happening, like no one's in their homes. They're refugees, basically. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And I think, like, especially thinking like how you talked about when you, there's the story of what Kristen Dunst's character is trying to teach about journalism and partiality. You pull back a level, and that's kind of what the movie's doing too, impartiality and stuff like that. I think there's an argument you can make too that this movie, especially in like today's day and age, it's could be a little bit of commentary on this is what journalism's supposed to be, not the crap that we have now.
But also, though, like, it's also very, like, it's incredibly realistic in the sense that, like, I wouldn't call any of these journalists, like, heroes either. Like, the film really makes you sit with their desensitization and their sort of flippantness about it. And you look at Kirsten Dunst, like, of course, you can argue these are jobs that have to be done, especially in wartime. But the whole point of the film is that she's completely destroyed. Like, we should lay spoiler alerts down. Three. Two. One. Sure. She dies at the end of the movie, but like she's dead. Like that's the whole point of that last scene in Washington. Yeah. It's like you see her battery just
physically there's no run reaction.
Out, and she's just shambling through that final.
Well, I love like basically. all of their behavior when sort of taken objectively is pathological, right? Like, and you can tell because the whole time they are on the road, they have to fucking drink and do drugs.
They're basically drinking, smoking,
to just keep themselves going. It's like the only way they can sleep. It's the only way they can sort of, you know, handle it. But they are venerating, Garland's venerating a specific type of journalist here. Like these are the journalists who like, they can't imagine doing anything else. There's, what's her name? The younger one, Kaylee, the actress, Jessie. She gets a line when she's in that like first battle and she sort of comes away and she's talking to Sammy, the older journalist. And she's like, you know, that's like the most scared I've ever been in my life, but it's also the most alive I've ever felt or something. I think it's something like that.
Yeah. That character itself, even though I said she irritated me, that character is really kind of the key to the entire movie because we're seeing all the messages get distilled down through her and through her eyes and seeing how it's affecting her. Cause she is, you know, new to all this and seeing a lot of this the first time.
Well, so you get that extra like, aspect of it. We're all older Americans. Like, so I get why that character can be annoying. Cause like, you know, she's so naive about what she's walking into. Right. I mean, that the whole, a lot of film was about that, about watching her innocence kind of being taken away. Like in this situation,
you're 100% right. It's the naivety, everything that irritated me is
because we're parents, you and I, like that's what you feel when you watch a kid amble.
There's two or three times they got attacked because of her.
Yeah, totally. Well, like that one scene where they go to the gas station and you get out, and that's clearly a tense situation. She just gets out and wanders away. I'm like, are you for real right now?
Well, because she saw the bodies hanging.
Yeah, is that what you would do? I mean, that's the point. No, that's who she is.
But right? She's a journalist. I mean, that's
character developing there. But still, that scene was horrifying. Like,
I love that scene because that actually is that it's a scene that shows you how desensitized everyone is. You know, and like the way you get to see Kirsten Dunst's character Lee come in and sort of diffuse this moment, she knows how Jesse is feeling and she plays on that soldier's sort of, she's been in that situation.
It shows before. How smart she is and how steely she can be.
I like to
where then the brilliant moment where she convinces him to take a picture with the bodies, right?
That's her strength. That's her superpower, right? I mean, I love the way they cut that scene too, because it's like, it's, you know, it's a sort of like classic screenwriter. Like they got out early. And so like, we just pick them up in the car and it's sort of like, okay, you know, you sort of like left at the moment of maybe highest tension.
Yeah. It was interesting too, to me that throughout this entire movie going across the country, they're dealing, you know, interacting with different factions and the idea that all the, even in this situation of civil war, that all these different factions still loosely respected the fact that they were press. You know, they wouldn't necessarily fire on sight. They'd see the press badge and stuff. They would talk to them essentially, and instead of just start shooting at sight.
Whereas, is the warning that anybody, any journalist entering the Capitol gets shot on sight. But yeah, I mean, you would imagine that the, that sort of insurgent forces would want, insurgent forces against a theoretically like fascist government would want as much press as possible.
I mean, the counterpoint to that though is like Jesse Plemons was about to fucking murder all
right.
of them.
Well, not everyone, yeah. right? But yeah.
Totally. Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so but there was two or three different factions where they pulled up. They didn't know what to expect. They got out, showed them their press badges, and they're like, dude, okay, going through.
He steals this fucking movie in a 10-minute scene.
Yeah,
he really
like,
does.
He's like, he's got the gun on his shoulder. He's scratching his face. He's like, American, huh? Yeah. Like, they use that clip in the all the promotion, and yeah. That sold the movie, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about...
And that scene actually ended up being way more disturbing than I thought it was going to be from
the preview. Oh, it's way darker
from the preview.
Yeah. Than you see in the preview, for sure.
It also ends somewhat satisfyingly, too.
Well, it's the only... I would argue it's the only scene that gives you... release.
The girl gets thrown into the pit.
So grim. How about the heartthrob of the Daily Beast, Wagner Moura?
He's a handsome gentleman, John.
Yeah.
He's great. I really
he has what the kids would call Riz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does. Sure does.
He's got a little bit of a Chaz Palminteri in him, too, I think. Looks wise.
He's great. And I love, like, I just, I love
from 40 years ago, maybe.
No, I'm thinking of the wrong actor. I'm sorry.
I love the decision to make him and Kirsten Dunst.
Oh, what was his name?
I love the decision to make him and Kirsten Dunst, like, not, there's no love thing with them.
Well, like, they're just work colleagues. Yeah. They're
like, but
yeah,
that's smart because it just, it didn't need to be there. And it was, I thought that was good. If anything, there's a crack about him hitting on the younger girl.
Yeah, well, he definitely, there's a little bit of like...
Yeah, when they're in the parking lot, the mall parking lot, there was a
when he's like drinking the bottle of vodka.
And it's
like,
weird, they make sure to point out that she's 23, but she does look very young.
Oh, yeah, she looks super young.
Yeah, I also love that there's like attention paid to the part of the U.S. that is pretending like this is not happening. Mm-hmm. Both with the parents on the farms, and then also when they pull into that town, and there's like the quiet place is so tense, like seeing a town with actual toys in the yards and people walking, and
that's the thing. This country is huge, So you think even if there's like concentrated places where there would be battles, like man, how many thousands of small towns are there where it's just like there's nothing happening, and people just are deciding. Are we going to ignore it? Are we going to go Jesse Plemons style and dig a hole? Or like, what are we doing here? Mm-hmm. Like, and it could be a thousand different experiences people are having at any given moment of this like conflict.
Yeah.
Right. Unless you're on a contested border. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. For the record, I was thinking Bobby Cannavale.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I could see that.
He's in Maxine.
Yeah.
He's in Maxine. Yeah.
Yeah.
It really ramps up in the third act. When, first of all, that scene you're talking about, John, Apocalypse Now, right? Where they're like, we're hovering into the base. That you know, those sort of little peaks at what it might look like, while it does not touch at all in the ideology, it does, there are these little moments where it kind of gives you a glimpse of logistical things.
Yeah.
And that was, for some reason, I was really fascinated by that. Like, oh, this random field in, I don't know where they were.
They were in Virginia at that point. Yeah.
Where they're staging and like, and you know, you take a moment and you're like, interesting. They have like military vehicles. And you're like, yeah, well, there's military bases all over the country.
Well, yeah. I mean, in California and Texas.
I was going to say, that's kind of, that's a link between California and Texas. That's those military bases.
Besides the GDP. Yeah.
Well, they also bring in that scene, the other journalists, the embedded journalists who have sort of been like, I mean, they're embedded with the fighting force. And so it gives you like a slightly different perspective on this team that we've been rolling with. You know, because it's a different cut. It's a different view of like what this journalistic experience could be like.
It really kind of showed with Kristen Dunst and the other guy, their kind of single-minded focus on what they were trying to capture. They wanted to get there to get a quote from the president and the picture, whereas like the embedded people had like a whole different drive that they were that was keeping them
it's
going.
It's funny too, because even the older guy at one point says to, what's his name?
Joel.
Like, what do you think he's going to say to you? And he's like, probably bullshit. But like, it almost, he doesn't care. It's just about the mission.
Yeah. I love the like final scene for that.
Yeah. You know, the way that comes together.
That'll work. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, so that scene is really fascinating. And there's an incredible like acting moment with him in that scene, right post we basically go from the scene with Jesse Plemons right to this base, essentially after they've escaped. And he's just like gutturally screaming, basically.
Yeah.
For an extended period of time.
Yeah. Like it's well, and a really interesting decision. There's a, cause it's, you get him and there's another scene. Maybe it's,
oh,
it's,
they're driving and that's when you find out the guy's shot.
Yeah. Well, but yeah. In those moments, we don't hear anyone expressing their grief. So in a movie where you're being assaulted, you're being assaulted. The thing that you are not given is the sort of like extreme expressions of grief. Cause yeah, it's like a mid shot. I mean, he's not shot in close up or anything necessarily, but he is like, I mean, acting the hell out of
it's very midsummer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's covered by the helicopter, right? At least when they're in Virginia.
And then they decide, like, screw it, we're just going to go and see what happens. And they end up in D.C. And, like, man, the direction in that scene is just brilliant. I mean, it's like a war movie in Washington, D.C., and it's so – you're just right on the ground with them. And it's – what I really liked was it focuses really heavily, Casey, you were mentioning, like, on kind of the choreography of what it looks like, the interaction between a soldier and a war photographer, and how it's a lot of like position, it's a lot of like them just grabbing them and physically moving them out of the way. But to your point, Casey, there is a strange sort of respect in a way, but it's also like, you need to listen to me or you're gonna fucking die.
Which may be a common thing for combat photographers, because I know they're, you know, the Vietnam had tons of embedded photographers, so that could be standard.
That's literally how Tom Savini learned about anatomy, was being a combat photographer.
Thanks.
Yeah,
the choreography and like when they started going into DC, the choreography and stuff, it was all staggering. What really struck me was the trick that Garland used of the still shots that he mixed in time to when Jesse was taking pictures.
Yeah.
I thought those still shots, the moments they were capturing, I think just added even more weight on top of the chaos moment that was going on.
It's the snapshots. It is also the momentary silence.
Yes.
Is jarring and really grounds you and puts you right in that moment.
And there's like the biggest one was, and this is spoilerly, but when they got into the press room and the lady was like, hey, we won a deal, and they got that shot right after that scene. It's just like, oh shit.
So before that, even to me, one of the most disturbing parts is when a bunch of people rush out in a motorcade and will look to me like an attempt at a diversion. Mm-hmm. And when they kind of stop them, a door opens up and a woman gets out and just like, she just looks like a wonk.
Straight murdered.
Like murdered. A DC.
Yeah.
Like right out of like, the West Wing or Succession or something. Like in a pantsuit, gets out and just murdered. And it's like not even a thought about it. It's
really was struck too, because they mentioned throughout a couple times throughout the movie that most of the troops that the president had with him in DC were Secret Service. Because they mentioned like a lot of them had already like given up and whatnot. They was left with Secret Service and whatnot. And the fact that they still look like Secret Servicemen, they did. They're in DC. They didn't have them kitted out and stuff like that. It just kind of, I think, lends to how shaky that administration was.
Well, it's narratively, it's an interesting choice that he makes, because he does. I can't remember if it's when they first get to that base. I think it is when they first. It might be when they're talking to those the embedded journalists, and they're like, it's over. Like basically the last remaining generals have resigned. So like the only thing left to do is go into DC and kill the president. So the drama of like what's going to happen is is non-existent. I mean, you know what's going to happen. They're going to march in there and they're going to fucking kill every single person because the people who want to live. Yeah. Because the people who want to live have already.
They gave up. You know,
yeah. Have already come out waving the white flag.
At this point, right. If you're still there, you're basically a combatant.
Well, and that's where like those people escaping in or trying to escape in those sort of in the motorcade, like you knew what you were getting into because the other option is like you stay in the White House and like keep your hands up and just hope they don't kill you when they come in. But as soon as you try to like ram the tanks, like no, you're getting aerated, so to speak. So
yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's super graphic, though, the way it's shot. I mean, and
it's so good. And then they get in the White House and basically it's like room to room guerrilla warfare for like 20 minutes.
Yeah. And that hallway approach to the Oval Office was super intense. And, you know, it took them a while to get through there. That was really well shot, too.
I really do wish there was like more Nick Offerman, but I just generally feel that about my life.
Everybody needs more Nick Offerman.
I mean, you talk about somebody who just shines, like the speech in the beginning and then rounding the film out, and the film ends like he just gets shot and then the film ends. Did you guys then stick around for like the credits?
I watched some of them.
Because like the photo slowly develops and it's them smiling over his body, like thumbs up.
Well, I think it would have been very hard to bring Nick Offerman into the movie in any way that wouldn't have made it more political.
Well,
yeah,
exactly. Goes against I just love Nick Offerman
because you do hear him. He is like threaded throughout the movie because they're like listening
to the radios and stuff. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, but like screen time, he's maybe 2 minutes in this whole movie.
Not much. Yeah,
top.
And you know, we get that quote of like, "Tell him not to kill me." His last words.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's in no way trying to save the country, right? Like there's nothing about his negotiation or the press secretary.
Oh, it's all about saving his ass.
It's all about his own ass. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which like is fair at that point,
but also like, but beyond that, actually though, like, cause if he really wanted to save his own ass, he had plenty of time to flee or go into exile. I think it's more delusional. It's like, he's trying to project like we're all good. We got this. We're waiting for them to surrender, whatever. But then that sort of delusion is revealed when we find out that most of the military is deserted.
Yeah.
It's very like Last Days of Hitler, right? Where he's guiding divisions that they don't even exist and people wouldn't tell him cause they were like afraid of him.
Well, it's like, and he sends that poor woman out to negotiate. I mean, like, you knew exactly what was going to happen to her. Yeah. It's just,
out in the diversion knowing what was going to happen to them.
Or they ran on their own.
I kind of wondered if she was supposed to just slow them down, but he had nowhere to go.
He wasn't going anywhere. He was hiding under his desk. So it wasn't like there was a plan there. I think he was realistically trying to negotiate for his life, basically. So.
Or he had hoped that there was no way that he was the president and he'd been the president for 2 terms already. There's no way they would, you know, take him out.
Yeah.
There's probably some delusion in that matter, too.
Yeah.
Well, some pretty feel good Saturday programming.
Yeah.
Good times. It's just like Ex Machina and Annihilation. It's just there's so much like artfulness in what he does.
Yeah, he's good at surprising us too. That's what I like about his movies, because like Ex Machina, Ex Machina going in had no clue where we're going, and then he just made it crazy. This one, he's, you know, like you said, he's subverting our expectations and playing with it, surprising us.
Ex Machina is one that I've only I've seen Annihilation several times. I should go back to Ex Machina. That one's pretty great.
Yeah,
I might go watch Dread again.
Dread's pretty great too. Movie.
Mike says Virginia has a huge naval presence, also VMI and a myriad of agencies that operate out of Northern Virginia.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But those vehicles theoretically came from the West. It was my point. Like,
well, they were part of the WF.
So. I imagine the shit's spread all over. Honestly,
yeah,
or been seized by them from other bases
as they move. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is an interesting aspect though of this movie. If you had to like pick one thing to nitpick, what was the Navy doing for all these different nations throughout this whole thing? We never did see them.
I mean, granted,
we weren't on the coast, but still.
I did love that sniper scene with the Christmas village.
Yeah, that was
those guys were pretty funny. I loved when he was just like, "Everyone shut the fuck up."
And honestly, I kind of want to know what's happening up there in that. Was it the New Americas that was Oregon and Washington and Colorado and those in that upper west corner? You don't really get any detail.
Is that what they called it?
I think so.
Oh, I didn't catch that. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, look, like, but that's, there was a decision that was made. It's like, we're not here to like, they have to keep this thing tight, you know?
Oh, no, I'm not complaining. I'm talking in terms of the world building. I'd be fascinated to know what they were doing throughout.
Well, I mean, it's just so interesting, right? Like, we love throughout history, when we look back on history, we love to just place factions and people in buckets. And sometimes there's like a fairly clear good and bad, I guess, but like it's all perspective in some sense. Like this movie is, that's kind of the whole point of the movie. Like he's just refusing to give you a clear villains and good guys, aside from Nick Offerman, really.
Which is a cool aspect too, because when, you know, before we got into this and I had my expectations built up that there was going to be a good versus evil and stuff like that, you got to wonder if that's going to cause problems in our culture, not knowing what this movie was. I was worried about it. It's like, what is the response to this movie going to be?
I've seen articles saying that a lot of like MAGA people went to it expected to see this like thing that sort of glorified this sort of conflict and were like confused by it, presumably.
Yeah, my understanding is this is like doing very well in like the blue places and not so well.
I mean,
that's true of like a lot of movies. Just like that's every A24 movie probably. Well,
because it's about nuance and it's not lionizing anyone. It's basically this is fucked and here it is.
It is a war movie though. Like it's a straight up, like if you like war, I mean, you know, if you like Black Hawk Down and you like The Hurt Locker, like this is doing a lot of.
Well, so that was what I had read, is that he studied foreign war zones like Mogadishu and places with like protracted urban civil wars. Mm-hmm. And that was like what he based a lot of the idea of how things would play out.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie does, though, like kind of rely on. We haven't talked about like the relationship between January 6th and like being embedded with a group of soldiers breaching a Capitol building, essentially, right? And like what that relies on for all of us in our nervous systems in this country.
That's true too.
Like what it's like to see the Lincoln Memorial blow up, and some, you know, that's the only like Michael Bay shot of this whole thing, really. Is
Oh man,
going over that,
the helicopter shots of the DC sky with like competing anti-aircraft fire just shooting into the darkness. You can't even really see if they're shooting at those. That was so eerie. That was such a well done shot.
Well, in a split second, your first reaction is fireworks. And then you're like, oh shit, that's not fireworks.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. That the Joel character is he's getting so hyped when he hears the gunfire. It's a drug. It's like a drug hitting his system, and he's just like,
John once heard a local news producer say, good news, someone's house burned down. We have a story to leave the news with. And I was young when I heard that. I'm gonna be real with you. If I heard that now, I wouldn't fucking bat an eye. But I was like 23 when I heard that, or 22, and I remember being like, excuse me.
I mean, I remember hearing my colleague, like being with my colleague, or telling this story that her wife's an emergency room nurse, that there was a massive car accident outside their house, and like the nurse and the nurse's friends were over, and they all ran at it, and she like instinctually, and she was like, you might need to look at yourself. Do you know what I mean? Like they're all just like Joel, like running right into it. They all have this like totally counterphobic response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. It's a real one. Do you recommend this, Matilda?
Yes. Bring a Xanax if you take Xanax.
Yes, indeed.
John.
Yes.
I don't have a prescription, but I'll take one. Bring an extra one. All right. Yeah. I mean, of course, yes. And see in the theater. Like I almost did IMAX, but I just had a feeling like it was going to be a lot and I was correct. So I'm kind of glad. Not IMAX, RPX, which is like the sound systems and those things are pretty legit. The screen's not quite as big, but like, there we go. four thumbs up for Civil War. Let's the movie, not the idea. Let's take a quick break and do some fan mail.
You really think a cop did this? Why not?
Why does Jack keep killing people?
He'll kill again. He enjoys killing.
When the most terrifying man in the city carries a badge.
I'm gonna read you your rights.
You have the right to remain silent.
I know who committed these murders.
Forever.
He's back. Only now he kills innocent people.
Maniac Cop rated R.
Hey, I'm Lee Majdoub from See No Evil 2, and you're listening to Bloody Good Horror.
Send feedback to info@bloodygoodhorror.com or on Twitter using #AskPGH. Join Patreon to get back episodes and much more. Patreon.com/bloodygoodhorror.
And we're back. John, if you tell me I can't put this on my top 10 list, I will respect it, but I do need an official ruling.
I'm gonna say no.
Okay.
We're watching. We're covering a lot this year.
You'll pry Love Lies Bleeding out of my cold dead hands.
Just that so at least has like.
There's body horror.
Fantastical body horror. Yeah, I mean,
somebody vomits up another person. That counts. That's real.
Yeah.
All right. No email tonight. info@bloodygoodhorror.com. Don't forget, you can get a live stream of the show if you sign up at patreon.com/bloodygoodhorror. We've also started publishing, like, you get an exclusivity of that, the live stream itself. A few days later, it does go live on YouTube. The bonus of watching live is you can ask us questions in real time. We got a bunch of people on with us tonight. We got Rachel, Levi, Mike, Liz. So, and you can also talk to us in the you can pretty much like have a conversation with us on the picture if you're hanging out in the chat.
Not with me, because I don't get there early enough.
John,
but
doesn't care.
Eric, we should also mention you might be hearing ads in this year podcast.
Yes.
At this point.
I forgot last week, and then you jumped in there for me.
Yeah, we turned ads live last episode through Spotify. My experience of it is that they actually didn't turn on until like maybe today. I had kind of been checking. If you downloaded it sort of like when it came out, you probably didn't get them, but you probably will get them going forward unless you are subscribed to the patron feed, which will always be ads free and early. And then YouTube is just going to have regular YouTube ads. I mean, they do what they do. We can't.
Yeah. On the patron feed, you get episodes Thursday evening as opposed to Friday morning, and they'll always be ad free. And of course, and depending on the tier, you'll also get the live stream. But yeah, when you sign up for Patreon, you got to search for it a little bit, but they'll give you an RSS feed that you can just plug into Apple or wherever. Spotify's the only one I think you can't just like plug in RSS into.
I think you can pull Patreon feeds. You might be right. I don't know. They have a workaround.
I have a weird, bias against listening to podcasts on Spotify, so I don't actually know that much about it.
Me
just
too.
It just feels wrong to me.
they are our podcast hosts, though, here at Bloody Good Horror. And
it's true.
We're great fans.
We love it. We love them. Yes.
Real quick, looking at the YouTube comments, Mike has gone through his very first BGH live stream. Says he hope he didn't embarrass himself. Mike, I just wanted to say you did very well.
We can't see you, so it's great work, Mike.
You were well behaved.
You'll hear like a pre-roll ad, maybe a couple ads after the review, and then post-roll. But if you're hanging out for the post-roll, you're psycho anyway, so you deserve.
Please listen is what Eric means to say.
No, but if you like listen to the end music of a podcast, you just let it play all the way out. I have thoughts in my head I need to get rid of, John. I'm on to the next show the second you stop talking.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
All right. No email, Casey. What do we got?
All right. We're on Threads. Bloody good horror. All one word. You can go out there, follow us, ask some questions. First up, we got the drummer from Foghat. Is anyone planning on catching Dawn of the Dead in theaters for the 45th anniversary? Oh. Dawn45.com has showings for every state.
Oh, I doubt I'll get it. Is that a Fathom event or is that like a very limited thing?
I don't know.
Check out dawn45.com.
I'm looking right now, John.
But speaking of, I just read yesterday that Alien is coming out in theaters on the 26th for its 45th anniversary, too.
Oh, man. Alien. Good Lord. I would 100% see if I can.
Yeah.
So that's a busy weekend, that Dawn of the Dead on the 25th and Alien on the 26th.
Oh, this is hilarious. John, there's an Alamo Draft House in New York City. How did I not know that?
Yeah. I think there's two, or there's one.
These
in
These are
like,
all in New York City, with the exception of Rochester. Coxsackie, which is hilarious. Do you know where that is, John? I guarantee you do not.
No.
It's like, it's where Jesse Clemens would be living in Civil War.
I could have guessed that. But
so I probably will not be catching it. I literally know there's a theater there. That's fun. That's hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, we got one other question out here, and now we did just get done discussing the show, but I think this is a good question because we didn't really touch on this. Right Now says, I think this movie has a lot of horror elements in it. Do you agree?
There's moments that are, that there's a couple of moments. Yeah, this Jesse Plemons scene in particular starts to feel horror-y at some point.
He's definitely got unhinged redneck vibes to him. Yeah. For sure.
I've weighed in on where I,
I mean, I don't think it fully crosses over, but it has moments.
Sure.
Yeah. I think there's definitely elements there. It's more horrific than horror in a lot of it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say it's like such an unsparing war movie that you can learn the same thing about yourself in the theater that you might in a horror movie about, like,
I mean,
am I a fighter or a flighter? Or, yeah.
We didn't really talk about it, but like, God bless A24. These fucking people are a gift to humanity. Like how they're making legitimately artistic films, making money, creating a business. Like it's incredible. And they don't miss, dude.
Downward slope like that Blumhouse has either.
And the trailer that they played for the soft glow of the screen, TV screen or something, that film looks so good.
It looks so weird. I think that's out. That's either out or...
I vote that we do that. I'd like to do that one.
Yeah, wait. So on I think I did put it on the sort of holding pen list, but I'll make sure. I saw the TV glow. That's what it's called. It is on the list. So
what the hell did I say? Not that.
I don't know. You were just mouthing off.
Is that it, Casey, or is there thread stuff?
That is it for threads.
Okay. Let's see. What we got here? I wasn't ready, John.
No, you definitely weren't.
No.
We should put an ad break in right here.
Connor says, do you think Kirsten Dunst puts a saddle on Jesse Plemons and rides him around their estate like a pony?
I forgot they were a couple.
They're married. Yeah, they've been married for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, you know John, I'm the world's biggest Breaking Bad fan. He's brilliant and horrifying in that show.
Yeah, yeah, he's really good.
Every time he shows up, I mean, and even in comedy, like, have you seen him in Game Night? That's the one that the internet is in love with him for is Game Night, because he plays this, like, just unbelievably unhinged, funny character in that movie.
He was good in Fargo, too.
I was going to say, they're great in Fargo, because they're, like, a married couple in Fargo, right?
Yep.
Yeah, they seem
he's the lovely. Butcher, and she's, like, the...
I will say he got Ozempic. Though I don't know if you've seen him, but he's like he weighs like 90 pounds now, like everyone else.
Did he? Oh, I mean, I sometimes just think like those guys go on sort of like, you know, weight.
We talked about this last week, though. It's like name a celebrity you've ever seen on Earth that like maybe yo-yos a little bit. They all weigh nothing now.
Oh yeah, like,
true.
Yeah,
it's wild. All right, which good for them, but it's just it's weird to see everyone in Hollywood like. Shrinking away before your eyes. Not even related to the movie, but why isn't the excellent new hi-fi album on Bandcamp? That was a
thought Bandcamp
question.
Didn't it get shut down? Bandcamp? Does that still
It's been kind of, there's been stuff going on. It got absorbed. It got bought by someone. Is Casey frozen like that right now? Can someone, for the love of God,
take
a screenshot of that?
He is frozen.
You have to see your face. Casey, you look like Jack Nicholson in Batman right now.
Yeah.
It's actually amazing.
Yeah. It looks like he has a cigar in his mouth.
It does.
I just get a black screen for myself. So
please don't change it. Anyway, no, I like Bandcamp, but like it's just been diminishing returns on there. I really appreciate all the people that bought stuff from me on there. But I really just want people to listen to it. And I got really tired of dealing with multiple releases because Bandcamp's the one thing that you can't just hit every store. Like I hit every other store with like the hit of a button, basically. Bandcamp, you got to go in and create everything. And it's just too much. I just want people to hear it. So it is like, it's on Apple and like everywhere. Literally like a dozen music stores I've never heard of. So whatever weird thing you use, it's on there. It's on Tidal, John.
Oh, Tidal.
I actually got I think I told you guys I got a royalty check the other day.
Ooh, from like Tidal?
$30 from everything.
Ooh.
That's for like years, but still.
Yeah, but you got paid now.
Yeah.
You're a professional.
That's right. Chris says, can they get the entire Parks and Rec cast for Civil War 2? I was just thinking of Jerry. Be pretty good.
Leslie Dope would have a pretty strong faction of her own, I think.
Our man says, I'd go to war for Jesse Plemons. Would you? he is a gem. This is a good one from Roger. Where do you rank this against other Garland-directed written films? It might be his best, honestly. Like,
it's got to be his biggest budget by a large
It's weird because of my sentimental favorite is probably Annihilation because I'm just obsessed
with
that story.
You love Annihilation,
but I think Ex Machina is even a step up from that.
I love it. Ex Machina is my number
like
one.
Ex Machina is like a brilliant psychological thriller, and again, it's like sort of near future, which I love, where he's playing with ideas like the films. Both of these films could end up being prescient in some way. Like, but
I'll be honest and say Ex Machina because it's got Oscar Isaac.
I was going to say Oscar
Isaac. Oscar Isaac also in Annihilation.
Yeah.
True.
This question is specifically for you, John, from PJ. What kind of American are you?
PJ, I'm the kind that if I could have a bunker, maybe I would be down for a bunker.
John's one of those New York City Americans, so not a real one.
I'm like, as I said earlier, like, is there a boat I can be on just for like a couple of months, like while this shakes down?
That is actually the last question.
You know what the saddest thing is? I looked at the map for this movie and how the factions were split up, and Indiana's right smack in the middle of the Loyalist states. And my first thought was, oh God. And then I was like, no, that makes sense.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, sadly enough.
Oh, boy. So there you go.
Love it.
Oh, Eric's frozen now, too.
He's just
very still.
Frozen. Actually, I blame this on Rachel. I'm reading her comments on YouTube. Because she's saying that she has seen I Saw the TV Glow, and that the people she was with were split on it.
Yeah, that's just Eric's screensaver face.
So perhaps divisive. Yeah, I just, as my father would say, I was shutting down for maintenance. There you go. We decided Abigail next week. Yes,
affirmative. Indeed.
Pumped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John, a big advocate for this film.
LFG!
Yeah.
Let me tell you. All right. That's going to do it. We survived the Civil War, John. We're still here.
We did.
You know what? They didn't have the Guns N' Roses song in this. How disappointing is that?
Oh, my God. That would have been... That song is amazing.
Yeah.
Missed opportunity. But there is. So there's about five or six, like, very carefully curated licensed tracks, and there's an official Spotify and playlist on Spotify And the one that hit me, we didn't even talk about this scene, but it's when they're driving through the wildfire, presumably yeah. that was started by, you know, some bad shit going on. But and this I'm gonna look it up quick while we're here. The song that plays during that is "Breaker's Roar" by Sturgill Simpson.
Oh yeah, yeah,
mm-hmm. So good, incredible.
I mean, it's Sturgill, man. He's the best.
Yeah.
So here's what they play. I'll just say there's only six songs. It's "Love Fingers," never heard of it, by Silver Apples. Mm-hmm. "Rocket USA" by a band called Suicide. "Say No Go," De La Soul. Mm-hmm. "Sweet yeah. Little Sister" from Skid Row. Like, just really fascinating.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what that was. Yeah, that's when they're in the car chase with the car coming up. Yeah.
Then "Breakers" and then another Suicide song. So there you go. Bold name for a band, John.
Yeah. Hey, you want to check out the Suicide Show? Yeah.
I guess you don't forget it.
Maybe.
Yeah. Oh, and, so, you know, the chat reminds me, we didn't even talk about Fallout.
Well, I wanted to bring it up, but we don't have time at this point. We can do it next week. Have you guys finished?
I got two left.
I've seen one episode.
Oh, wait, man. How are we going to talk about it?
Yeah.
I watched like all eight episodes in 3 days.
Say, so let's spoil it. Let's just talk about it, John. I don't know.
Well, hold on. No. We got to wait. You got to watch some more. You got to get at least
I'll
a case.
Get back to you in August.
Yeah.
Get to, what is the actor who plays Dr. Spichem in KCI?
It's Chris Parnell.
Chris Parnell, yeah.
He's from SNL.
Get to, you know, I know he was on SNL, but get to the Chris Parnell character and then we can dig in.
Doctor, I love Dr. Spaceman.
This is all I'll say. As someone who spent hundreds of hours between Fallout 4 and Fallout 3, the accuracy is
it's crazy.
Stunning.
Yeah, yeah.
To such a unique and silly world. It's incredible, like the dedication to it. I've heard people describe it as the best video game adaptation ever.
It's really, really good. And if there, I have they announced a second season? I just like assume, is it doing well? I have no idea. This is like
when I'm on the internet.
I can say I'm seeing ads for it like everywhere.
It's really good.
I've had normies ask me about it.
Yeah. It's pretty violent. I mean, it's violent, but it's like gory too. Like there's a level of like,
which the, I mean, that's the, you know,
accurate. No, it's totally, but it just, you know, that's going to be a problem for some folk probably.
Love it. Yeah. All right. Well, John doesn't want to talk about it. So we'll talk about it next week.
Next time.
All right. Hope you enjoy the show and we'll talk to you next week.
See you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.